Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
We're closer to our regular show today than we were yesterday, but we still have a lot to talk about concerning the untimely death of Kobe Bryant. And, with that, there's a lot of things that have come out about, and Don brought this up, and a lot of people are discussing it. Should the NBA retire 8-24? Should they change the logo of the league? And as much as I respect Kobe and his game and obviously the tragic way that he died, I don't think that you can do that. I don't think that I would do that, because what do you do 30, 40 years from now when Michael Jordan dies or when Bill Russell passes away? I mean, these are great, iconic players in the NBA as well. And as great as Kobe is, and the fact that he died in such a terrifying way at a very young age, Mark Cuban has already said nobody will wear 24 with the Mavericks. Listen, that's an individual decision by him. But for a league to just sweep their hands and say nobody will wear 8-24, I just don't know if that's the right move. I don't like the feel of that, Don.
No, I mean, if you get enough owners to agree with Mark Cuban, then it's an easy thing to do.
Right.
You know, number 24 is significant because that seems to be the number we gravitate to more than 8, because he chose to go to 24, so that was his number in his mind, that it's very difficult for other people to wear it. Like, the NHL retired Gretzky's number 99 because they just didn't think it would be right that anybody else wore 99, and also part of it because, Michael, who else would want to wear 99? Think of the responsibility to carry that number. Now, 99 is different than 24. Mm-hmm. 24 is a very common number. 99 is not. But would it be fair for some kid to come up and be straddled with having 99 and live up to the expectations that that would mean? I mean, Hosang for the Islanders wore 66, and many people were like, oh, my God, he's wearing Mario's number. He's not Mario Lemieux. So sometimes you retire it for the significance of the player, but also because would it make sense for anybody else to wear that, to carry that responsibility? Because not only would somebody wearing 24 feel like they needed to play like Kobe Bryant, but to be Kobe Bryant. That's difficult for anybody to have to do. So what would be the big deal to do that?
It's interesting, though. If obviously Michael Jordan is alive and well. However, had they decided no one's going to wear 23 because he's the best player ever lived.
Right.
LeBron's not 23.
Right.
You know, it is interesting. Think about how many players right now who are 16 years old, because of this, are going to wear 8 or 24 for their entire careers. You know, there's a whole generation of kids
right.
who are all going to be fighting over 8 and 24 now. So I'm not – it's just an interesting thing. Now, you look at the league, as of 2018-2019, the only 24s of note, let's see, Grayson Allen, Kent Bazemore, Buddy Hield, Hollis Jefferson, Mason Plumlee, and then 8s, there are a bunch more.
Now, Dinwiddie just changed from 8 today, didn't want to wear it anymore.
Right. Oh, yeah, there's Spencer Dinwiddie. He's on the list. And really, he changed from it.
Yes.
So they're
out of respect. Wow.
So, if people stop wearing 8 and 24 organically, okay, that's up to them. 50 years from now, I guess people will start wearing it again. And another discussion that we had yesterday, and it was spurred on by something that our guest Mike Breen said, that there might be some consideration of changing the league logo. And boy, the more I thought of that, right now, everybody is so emotional and raw because of the way Kobe passed. You know, if there's a league logo that's going to be changed, it should be Michael Jordan, not Kobe Bryant. So I just don't think you change the league logo.
Well, but hold on. I don't think they should change it, but I think that logic's faulty.
Why?
Because it being Jerry West is sort of arbitrary. Why is it West and not Chamberlain? It's just the logo, right? Like, it ended up becoming that. Jerry West isn't the greatest player of all time. He's a top 10, top 15 player of all time. But it's not – he didn't get that.
You know, for the longest time, the NBA denied it was him.
I know. Well, yeah. And they didn't pay him.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the hard part is with Kobe's trials and tribulations and the alleged rape in Colorado – I believe for that reason, they would not give him the logo. I think right now, while people are emotional, they think it was great. And then when the dust settled, conversations would start. And now you have someone who, while you can have whatever thoughts you want, you can, and I've read the entire case, and you can do whatever you want and come to the conclusion you want to come to. Do they want to have anyone who has any sort of potential dark side as the logo to their league? It's one thing to name the Staples Center, a court, an award.
Right.
The entire logo after one person. I mean, Jerry West has proved to be squeaky clean his entire life, and he's an old man. So that's a big thing to give someone.
Let me stop you for 1 second, though, because it's curious. Let's say, and I wish that this was the case, that Denver never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Would you still make him the logo? Again,
I could see this moment.
He's one of the great players of all time, but you can't unequivocally say that he is the greatest player of all time.
But you can't with Jerry West either.
But that wasn't what they just had a design. They said, well, this looks the best. Okay, so why they chose – you're right. It should have been Will Chamberlain or Bill Russell, but they chose West because of the way it looked. But now you're switching the logo. Why?
Because you would be doing it because of the to some degree, because of the tragedy. Because it's to honor him because of his life being cut so short.
Because you can't say, well, why wouldn't it be Michael Jordan? Well, if Michael Jordan dies in his sleep at the age of 90, that's not nearly as tragic as what happened to Kobe at the age of 41 dying in a helicopter crash. So I think when you look at the circumstances, Michael, it's not we believe he's the best player ever to play.
Mm-hmm.
Or that we believe he represents everything the NBA represents. It's God, people really loved him. He was really highly respected. And the circumstances in which he was gone would eventually lead to that possibility. I agree with you. I wouldn't do it. I think that's a little bit too much. But retiring his number because of the circumstances, I think I would get that. I would understand that. Taking it out of circulation. Maybe you take it out of circulation. Do you necessarily have to put the 24 up in every arena? I don't know. They could talk about that. But if you're looking for a way to honor him, those are the two. Of those two choices, I would choose the number over the logo.
Isn't it crazy, though? It's been 3 days.
Right.
It's now the third day. And what Don was just – I was just listening to Don talk. I can't believe Kobe Bryant's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't believe it. When you just said that, now it's been 3 days, and you're like talking about – we're talking. I have a moment where I go, are we talking about Kobe Bryant? He's gone? And that feeling that I just had is precisely why – they're discussing doing things that are so major because it's unbelievable.
And that's why you always have to be careful after a tragedy. Like when Thurman Munson died in a plane crash, there was thought at that time, let's waive the 5-year eligibility and just vote for him on the Hall. And they said no. Now, they did that with Clemente, and he got in right away. He was a no-brainer at 3,000 hits, you know, a couple of world championships, and Thurman would be a borderline Hall of Famer. They didn't waive the 5 years. I think that you have to be careful about doing anything when it's so close to something so raw. Now, another thing, I was listening to Barton Hahn driving in, and there was a caller who said, I don't understand the overwhelming reaction about Kobe Bryant, who people really don't, a lot, most people that are reacting this way, don't know. And I said yesterday on the show, that when someone is a sports star or even an actor or an actress, we think that we know them. They are part of our life. So we might not have a relationship with them, but we think that they know them. But I want to make clear something. Like, if you watched the beginning of the show yesterday or listened to the beginning of the show, I broke down. Now, you know, a lot of people on Twitter said, I didn't know that Michael cared that much about Kobe Bryant. And to be brutally honest, I love to watch Kobe as a player. I didn't have that connection that some people have. The thing that made me break down, and maybe I can't speak for everybody else. I don't know how you guys feel. The thing that got me is the daughter. Because, you know, Don and I are parents now. And I can't imagine what Kobe Bryant was thinking if he knew he was dying. If they knew that helicopter was going into the side of the mountain to look at his daughter and the other children on the helicopter. That's what gets me. That's what chokes me up. That wasn't about Kobe yesterday. So I understand people saying, why is that visceral reaction? I wouldn't have cried if it was, you know, Kobe was in the helicopter alone. I would have felt badly. I'm very, you know how I am about death. It's a weird thing. I don't handle it very well. But to me, the sorrow was about the children. I don't know how you felt.
I think a lot of people felt that way. I think a lot.
The children.
Yes. I think the children has a lot of people completely. There's a couple of camps here. I think there's a very small percentage of people who don't get it. I think it's a pretty small percentage with this one.
What do you mean don't get
it? Who aren't particularly caught up in it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I heard. That's sad. I think most people have a strong feeling here. But I think one side is, of course, thinking about his daughter and their final moments together and the other children on board. Thinking about Vanessa Bryant, who had been with his partner for almost 24 years. And then, though, there is, for Andrew and I can't speak, I know Andrew's, of course, a father, and don't get me wrong, things related to kids, I want to have children one day, it's very touching to me as well. But we were talking, and for us, a big part of it is the connection to him as a player and how much he was in our households over the last 20-some years.
Yes, like a member of the family.
And I've been speaking to people, I mentioned this yesterday on the show, there are a lot of basketball households. This is the game now that people play as much as kids as any game in America, right? Certainly more than football, more than baseball these days. Youth basketball is a huge, huge thing. And in homes where you have serious kids who are serious about basketball, LeBron and Kobe are gods in those households.
Yeah.
The whole family comes together to watch these people. So I think there are a lot of households that this was the first experience they had with a death, was parents and kids sharing this death together.
Well, well, think about it, because when you play for 20 years and you enter the league as young as Kobe entered it, here's a 41-year-old that half his life was spent in the public eye. So if you get into sports at around 6, 7, 8 years old, the 20, 21-year-old listening spent half his life following Kobe. The 40-year-old spent half his life following Kobe, because that's how encompassing his career was when you play 20 years at that level. Then you add in the circumstances of the death. As you mentioned, there may be a small percentage they don't follow sports. They don't get it. 30 seconds into explaining who Kobe Bryant was and the circumstances in which he died can instantly get emotional. Because there's so much going on.
So many layers. 13-year-old
daughter, the people that are on the plane. So it was that perfect storm of things that just brought everybody together. So that doesn't happen very often. It's not your typical death. It's not your typical career. So that's why I think something special has to be done. I think the logo's a little over the top. But I think the retiring of his number is right in the wheelhouse. I don't think awarding, Andrew brought the suggestion of awarding the All-Star MVP award in his honor, or I don't think that's enough.
That's not enough. I feel the same
way. So I think the number
award doesn't mean enough.
The number to me just makes sense. And you're like, well, then that means you got to retire at 23. Well, not if Michael Jordan dies in his sleep at 90.
Yeah, but see,
you know, it's not the same. You know what I mean?
It shouldn't be about that. It shouldn't be about that.
But it's always about that.
Because of this awful, awful way he died. I mean, Drazen Petrovic died, a car accident. Oh, did we retire his number 3? Now the Nets did.
The Nets did,
not around the league.
Well, because Drazen wasn't Kobe.
I understand.
Nice player.
Yeah, but Kobe's not Michael. So 23 should never be worn by anybody either.
See, I don't want to sit here and start measuring things. It's just
Russell's happened. Number should never be worn again.
It happened. And Michael, we've been following sports our entire lives, right? I don't remember anything like this ever happening. The closest we can compare it to is Thurman Munson. That was 40 years ago.
Well, and with all due respect, Munson wasn't close to what Kobe was to basketball.
Just in New York.
Just in New York.
Yankee fans were devastated.
Right, of course. And so it's real local devastation.
Right.
This is international. China is in mourning,
So I don't want to sit here and go, what ifs, because I don't know. God forbid we experience this again, and we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. The fact is that I'm going to be 52 years old, Michael. You're 58 years old. Peter's 40. We've never experienced anything like this. So when something happens, like so singular, that I think the gesture has to be significant. And I don't want to sit there and rate the deaths or rate what happens if this guy goes. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But things like this don't happen but once sometimes in a century. It just seems I think more has to be done than just giving the MVP of the All-Star Game trophy in his name. I think it deserves a little bit more than that.
Now – The thing about this that makes it complicated, and also the outpouring of emotion from people, is the fact that as Bob Costas said, you know, we tend to canonize those that pass. And Kobe, through his own admission, was no saint, especially with the allegations of what happened in Denver. Now, it's important to note he was never charged with anything. There was a settlement that no one spoke about. And he did say in a statement, I could see why she would not have thought it was consensual, although he did think it was consensual. All that being said, Jimmy Kimmel did not have a studio audience yesterday for his show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was an entire show, Kimmel standing there talking about Kobe, who I think was a guest like 15, 16
15 times.
15 times,
yeah.
And they show clips from all of the appearances. And so Don put on Twitter, Jimmy Kimmel gets it,
hashtag RIP Kobe. Because I really think to not have the studio audience, you saw how emotional he was and the connection that he had with Kobe. I think he did the perfect show to honor Kobe.
And then people started snarking at Don. And, you know, one person tweeted Denver. Another person tweeted rapist.
Yeah, that called me a fraud.
Right.
How do we honor a rapist, an admitted rapist?
Like, admitted rapist.
And it was weird. That was the only reaction I got, Peter. Now, a lot of them were taken down because I think people saw them and then started eviscerating those people, and they were gutless, and then they deleted their tweet. It seemed tone deaf to me. It seemed like these are people that just don't like Kobe or didn't like the fact that he was honored. But I was surprised by it. But then, you know, you think about it and you realize that is part of the narrative. I think the timing is poor. We touched on this yesterday. To bring that up so close to the death, but I think it's also wrong to completely strike it from the record altogether.
Right.
So how you end up feeling about it is your individual feel, but to shoot it out 24, 48 hours after the death tells me that maybe you had more of a higher agenda than anything else.
I can't tell people how to feel. If they feel that that overwhelms this terrible loss, then that's their call, because if what was alleged took place in that hotel room, it's hideous. But then people do get second chances, and if you look at Kobe and the second act of his life, it looks like he changed a lot. I mean, he became a real father to those four girls. I mean, his whole life was wrapped around being a girl dad, as he said. I don't understand people's venom. And then when we talked to a person like Nancy Lieberman yesterday, who told us in detail the way he would go out of his way to make sure that she was being – he didn't even know her that well. She was being taken care of, that people weren't mistreating her when she was at the Sacramento Kings. I think there was a transformation, and you can allow that. You don't have to say, okay, that thing identifies his life. Now, he is fortunate, though, that when that happened, the Me Too movement was not in force. If there was, I don't know if you get back from that. I don't know if you do, but – he did what he did. He was not charged with a crime. He did come to a settlement with the woman, and then he moves on. It looks like he kind of became a better person. Whatever the case, even if you think he's the worst person on earth because of what happened, I'm sorry. Sitting there in a helicopter with his 13-year-old daughter, who obviously loved him like no one could ever love anybody else, and he to her, and the other parents with their children, and that helicopter explodes against a mountain, that you can't feel some kind of empathy or you can't feel some sort of sadness because of something that happened in Denver that we don't even know. Nobody knows. Two people know, but we're going to sit back and we can't feel sorry that families have had their life disrupted forever. I'm sorry, then I'm not going to put as much emphasis on that as I will on how I feel about children who did not buy into this. They did not rent that helicopter. They did not go to that game thinking that they were going to die at that moment. That's what gets me. And if you can't see that, I'm sorry. Denver does not eradicate the sadness I felt because of what happened on Sunday.
Very well said, and you're right. Everyone has the right to feel how they feel. However, if you were to apply this to your friends and family, and I'm not saying you have friends and family that are accused of the same thing Kobe Bryant did, but I'll say this. All of us have had moments that are not our proudest moments, some worse than others. And some of us have people in our family who we love who were accused or convicted of things that were not good. And you know something more about them. You've seen the whole story. If you choose to define him by what people say, if it's true, was the worst moment of his life, that's your choice. I choose to not define people by the absolute worst moment they've ever had, or in this case, simply ever been accused of. And furthermore, to be bringing it up this week when people are emotional, you know, there's a certain part, Michael, people just get annoyed. People see the whole world, and I relate to this to some degree, because you guys know I get annoyed about a lot of stupid things. People see everyone tweeting about one thing and everyone's posting about one thing, and if they don't feel a strong connection to it, they have to lash out at everyone and go, why do you feel that way? I don't feel that way. Just let people feel how they feel.
Well, that's why I talk about what is the motivation behind it. Is it you're so disgusted by what he was accused of that you just can't let it go? Then I can understand it, because what he was accused of was pretty bad. But if it's just because you're tired of everybody talking about it, you want to move on to the DH in the National League, right? You want to move on to something else because you're not a basketball fan, that you're sick and tired of the conversation, and that's the motivation for doing it, then I'm sorry, you don't have a kick coming to me.
If you have some time today and you want to get a feel for what Kobe Bryant became, please, if you have access to Twitter or Instagram, please take 2 minutes and listen to what L. Duncan did and said about Kobe Bryant on Sports.
It's on my Twitter. If you go to Rosenberg,
and I will retweet it right now. It makes you cry, and it brings the aspect of Kobe being a dad. And nobody is saying that the loss of Kobe should hurt more than the loss of John Altobelli and all those other people and all those other children on that helicopter. But we know Kobe. We don't know John Altobelli. We don't know the coach of the team that was on the flight. We don't know those poor children that were on the flight. We know Kobe, and through Kobe we knew Gianna. So that's why we grieve for all nine of those people and the families they left behind that are grieving right now. And will grieve forever. Forever and ever and ever. Their lives have been altered forever, and not in a good way.
Also, for our listeners out there who have family there, I'm just seeing now the news story of a 7.7 magnitude earthquake off the coast of Jamaica. And now there's a tsunami threat. It's still relatively early, but earlier today, a 7.7 magnitude earthquake, which is pretty massive, hit just off the coast. So as more information comes, we'll let you know. But I know we have a lot of listeners of Jamaican descent, so I wanted to put that out there.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. This is the Michael K. Show.
The world was heartbroken yesterday by a helicopter accident in Los Angeles that claimed the lives of nine people, including that of Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna.
I can't believe Kobe Bryant's dead. I still can't believe it. Kobe Bryant? He's gone.
Bryant!
I love Kobe Bryant. I'm the first to say, hey, I got four rings, and I know I couldn't have got three without him.
To watch him grow, what he became in this city, the legacy he established when he left.
Something from your life has been ripped away without any warning.
For me, man, he was everything. My childhood hero.
So let's honor Kobe, Gianna, and the other lives that were lost yesterday by following his example. Love your family, love your teammates, and outwork everyone else in the gym.
A singular word, Kobe, will resonate in the city of Los Angeles forever.
The only small source of comfort for me is knowing that he died doing what he loved the most, being a dad, being a girl dad.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show, everybody. There are other things going on in the sports world, so we're just going to reset and tell you some of the things that are going on. I'd like to get some clarity from Don, because I don't quite get it. The big rumor now is that the Chargers are letting Phillip Rivers go his way. He's going to be a free agent.
Right.
And everybody assumes that they're going to sign Tom Brady. Now, Robert Kraft has said that the Patriots want Tom Brady back. He has a legacy in New England. The Chargers are not that great. Why would Tom Brady make that move unless he despises Bill Belichick so much that we can't even imagine how much he despises him? It's a move that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, I guess I know he's from California, but he's from Northern California, not Southern California, and as you said, the Chargers, they are coming off a great season the year before, but certainly this season was one to forget. Unless, as you said, I do think there's a part of both of them, Bill and Tom, that want to prove they can do it without the other. So is it just that? I want to go someplace, show everybody that I can win a bunch of games, that I can be great without Bill Belichick. And maybe Belichick's thinking, you know, I'd love to be able to go out there and go to the playoffs and move on. Maybe that's what he's thinking.
Now, okay, if that's what they're both thinking, and we've had this debate back and forth, and there's no real answer to it, who's more important to the Patriots' success. But I will tell you this, Bill Belichick has a better chance to win a Super Bowl with another quarterback than Tom Brady does with the San Diego Chargers.
I don't know, because we just talked about how bereft of talent the Patriots were. Even if Gronk comes back, he had missed the whole year. They had a lot of problems offensively. And some of it was Tom getting older, but a lot of it was, who was he throwing the football to?
Right, no skill position.
You know, so they might be in kind of a rebuild as far as the offense is concerned. The defense carried them, but clearly at the end of the season, when they had to win in Miami to get a bye, they couldn't do it, and they lost in the playoffs. So maybe they're not that close. And now, will a bunch of, I don't know what the cap situation is for the Chargers, but will there be free agents falling over themselves to go to Los Angeles and get a chance to play with Tom Brady? So I kind of disagree, Michael. I think that they could be kind of on an even plane. But I still think Tom Brady has something to give.
So
and
do
if
I.
And if the right players go to Los Angeles to play with him, they're only 1 year removed from being a really good football team. Remember, Rivers was going to be an MVP.
Would you agree Anthony Lynn is not Bill Belichick?
Of course he's not.
All right.
I do like Lynn, though.
I like him, too. But they didn't have a good year this year. Now.
But he also, for the record, though, Rivers did take a serious step back this year. This was the beginning of him. So did Brady. So let's be fair. But they both started taking a step over the hill.
So then the question is begged, who's going to take over? There's so many free agents. Who does Belichick go with? Is it a Teddy Bridgewater? Is it Phillip Rivers? Cam Newton is going to be dealt. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people. There's some thought out there. There's rumors out there, strong rumors, that Drew Brees might retire.
Yeah.
That he might not come back. And that changes the paradigm with Teddy Bridgewater, because that's why he was there, to take over when Drew Brees ends up retiring. There's a lot of choices where they might not go with the kid that's backing up Tom Brady. They could bring in another quarterback that's established.
But there'll be options, and if you're Bill Belichick, maybe you're salivating at, hey, I can take a quarterback, right?
But the thing that I don't get, he's like a son, legitimately, to Robert Kraft, who has come out and said, been quoted as saying, we will do whatever it takes to bring him back. And he doesn't come back. What's this about?
Unless
it's got to be about more than...
But what, he's a son to you. What if that son comes to you and says, I think my time here is done. I want to move on. I want to go play for another team.
Oh, yeah. You let him go.
You don't force him to stay.
Well, so that might be the case, but I'm just wondering, why does he want to go so badly? Is it a total hatred of Belichick?
I don't think it's hatred. It's just there is that legacy. Think about it. He's one of the greatest players ever to play the game, but there's that, is it him or is it the coach? Nobody else. You don't feel that way.
But
as great as Bill Walsh was, does anybody take any credit away from Joe Montana?
No.
No, why?
But I don't think
because
people...
he was able to win even without Bill Walsh.
Yeah, but I don't think that people take a lot away from Brady. I think Brady is looked at as the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, what more does he want?
Yeah, but we're happy.
And also, for him to say, all right, I'm going to go somewhere else and do it, he's going to... You know, if you believe what Peter said, that there was a step down, that he's 43. It's not like he's 32 years old going to another place, taking a big chance. Because if there was a serious drop-off, then he's going to look bad. If he just all of a sudden grows old in New England.
Well, and also, let's add to it market, right? He shows up there. The hype machine starts to build. You know, very quickly, I in my opinion, if Tom Brady becomes the starting quarterback of the L.A. Chargers, they might instantly become the biggest ticket in L.A. I mean, I know the Rams are the Rams, but neither of those teams has a stranglehold on the market.
No, they're sharing the building now, so they're out of that soccer stadium, so they can actually draw a crowd.
Right, and if Tom Brady's their quarterback, there's a chance he will get a ton of attention. It would be a much bigger explosion if it's a dud as the new quarterback in L.A.
You can't ignore the fact, Michael, that we're talking about the greatest quarterback of our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Playing with the greatest head coach of our generation. I'm sorry, they're attached at the hip. You can't say one without the other. But Belichick does have that, hey, look, I went 11-5 when I lost Brady for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Brady doesn't have that.
You know, Brady has really, you know, not done anything without Belichick. So, yeah, listen, they're competitors, right? Go to Los Angeles, and heck, if he goes out there and they go 10-6 and lose in the first round, it'll be they were a lousy team. He gets there, all of a sudden they're relevant. I've looked at the Vegas odds. Take a look where the Chargers' odds are. They're not that bad because I think Vegas is anticipating Brady going there. That's got to be intoxicating to be able to kind of lose that guy that's been attached to you literally your entire career.
These guys, it's their life. They should do what they want. It has a lot of Joe Namath and Johnny Unitas, Rams and Chargers to me. It just does. I don't get what he's doing. Those guys were done where they were. Brady's not done in New England. Again, there seems to be this urgency to move on. Now, Super Bowl is this week in Miami, this Sunday. And, Don, you were telling me that buildings are shaking in Miami right now.
Yeah, the matter of fact, Yes just tweeted out video that a building was evacuated because I guess it must be from the earthquake in Jamaica.
Which is a pretty significant earthquake.
7.7 is the real deal.
What is the exact distance between the two?
Well, it was the coast of Jamaica, so it wasn't quite Jamaica.
It was off the coast of Jamaica.
Yeah.
So I guess it's being felt in Miami.
Here. Yeah, I saw a map. I'll try to get the exact. Oh, here it is. I mean, it's pretty far.
But 7.7 is pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it happened between, it looks like the center of the earthquake's between Jamaica and Cuba. And then on the other side of Cuba is Miami. So it's a distance away.
So they must be feeling it in Cuba, too, then.
I would imagine so.
Now, we'll talk more about the Super Bowl as we proceed into the week. Baseball news today, the Houston Astros are negotiating, right? They haven't named anybody. They haven't told any of the other candidates that they're out, but they're negotiating a deal with Dusty Baker. And I got to tell you, I don't get it. I don't get it. Don's a much bigger fan of Baker as a manager than me. Baker's great with players. And maybe that's what Jim Crane thinks he needs.
Now.
But he's not. But I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to let a front office guy manage the team for him. He's still going to manage the team. He has mishandled pitchers in the past.
Well, then
I don't understand this hiring.
No, the reason they hired him is because he's respected inside that room. He gets a lot out of players. And all the mistakes he may have made as a manager, because let's face it, he's the Marty Schottenheimer of baseball. He will get you into the playoffs, and then some disaster happens in the postseason that stops him from winning a championship. But he doesn't have to worry about that because they manage from within. They're not going to let him mess up pitching. That's all going to be figured out. And Dusty's got to be in
70.
His 70s
now. He's 70.
So he realizes if he's going to get another chance at a championship, he's going to have to change. He's going to have to adjust. So the worst parts of Dusty Baker, and I agree with you, in-game managing is not his strong suit. He's been taken away. And all the positives are exactly what the Astros need. I love the hire for Houston.
Why do you think Dusty over Buck, though?
I don't know.
They were considering an old-timer.
The only thing I could think, I think that Dusty can be worked with. Buck is going to be Buck.
He's going to be Buck.
I mean, they'd be smart to hire him as the GM. But I talked to a baseball person Sunday night who told me, watch the Astros. I said, what does that mean? And he said, they're going to be fine in 2020. Fine. They could actually win. After that, it's going to fall apart. Their farm system is barren. They're going to lose 2 first-round draft picks, 2 second-round draft picks, and their players are going to want to get out of there. They're going to scatter to the wind. So you got one good year that you have to take advantage of, 2020, and then it might change. Then it might change. So they decide to go with Baker, and they interviewed a lot of people. So, hey, you know how I feel about Showalter, but yeah, they haven't announced anything yet, but they are negotiating with Dusty Baker.
And we're big fans of Buck, but is it possible, Michael, in an interview, talking to Dusty, talking to Buck, you just felt like one would conform more than the other? I'm sure Buck said all the right things because he's smart. He knows how to try to get back into the league. But did he maybe show his hand that in certain moments he's not going to want to hear it, where Dusty would be more open to the analytical suggestions he's going to get?
I'm not sure.
Because Buck's a better manager than Dusty, I think.
Yeah.
Even though Dusty's had more success, and he took a team to a World Series.
Right, the one thing that's missing on both of their resumes is winning a World Series. And I think that could be the thing that keeps both of them out of the Hall of Fame. But Dusty Baker getting this job, they could win the World Series this year, even without trash cans banging. They
it's
could.
It's like so many. You look at Dusty, and he had some bad teams too. But you know, the situation in Chicago. He was the manager of the Cubs. They were supposed to be Cubs Red Sox World Series, not the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
But then, what's his name? Touched the ball.
No, and, that would have been Yankees. Cubs.
Yeah, I mean Yankees Cubs in 2003. Yeah. How big would that have been?
Yep.
And then he's the Reds manager. They blew the lead against the San Francisco Giants. And then he was in San Francisco and tons of heartbreaking losses, including the loss in the World Series in Game 7 to the Angels.
And then the crushing losses with the Nationals.
Oh, there's so many. But you also look at it and see how many teams he got into the playoffs and got deep into the playoffs.
And people in baseball absolutely love him. They love him. Now, speaking of the Reds, Nicholas Castellanos signs a 4-year deal with them. And it's a pretty good deal for Castellanos. He gets about $16 million a year. And he has an opt-out after the first year and the second year. So if he puts together an unbelievable season and thinks that he could do even better on the free agent market that doesn't have that many third basemen out there, guys like Chris Bryant could be traded. Nolan Arenado could be traded. Maybe he opts out after one year. But the Reds have put together a pretty good team, Don. They spent money and they put together a pretty good team.
So that would be interesting if they're able to kind of finally turn the corner. And also we're hearing a lot of traction yesterday, Michael, and it got lost obviously with the Kobe reaction. Is that many people believe that the DH is a fait accompli in the National League and that it could be here as early as 2021.
Wow.
And the reaction is, Peter, so over the top. And I was a traditionalist too, but it just makes perfect sense. It extends careers. People want more offense. Who really wants to see a pitcher hit? And with the analytics now, really, I mean, the strategy's kind of taken out of the game as it is anyway, right? A manager, what does he do in these situations? It's all played itself out anyway. Is the American League, Michael, all the games you call outside of Interleague is all exclusively American League. Has it damaged the interest in baseball that there's less strategy because there's the DH?
I don't get it, Don. Pitchers don't hit for most of their lives, and then they're asked to go hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. And I'm sorry, the small amount of strategy that you lose, I would trade that for the ineptitude that they show most of the time. Even when they try to bunt, it's a joke. They can't run the bases. It's terrible.
But Michael, the biggest strategy always was the awkwardness of a 1-0 game. My pitcher's pitching a gem. It's the top of the seventh inning. We're down 1-0. My 8-hitter gets a double. Do I pinch hit for my pitcher who's pitching so well and take him out so that we can get that tying run with a pinch hitter? Well, guess what? In the top of the seventh inning, Peter, that pitcher's probably coming out of the game anyway. That was the biggest strategy. What do I do late in the game when my pitcher's pitching a gem? 90% of the time, you're taking him out after six anyway because he hit his pitch limit, or you don't want him going the third time through the order. Get over it already. It's gone. It's done. If I can extend careers, I'm surprised the Players Association isn't forcing this to happen. Guys that are in the National League, in order to extend their careers, have to cut their chances of going in place in half because I can't stay in a National League team because I can't DH. It makes little sense now to
people
keep it.
Hold on. I mean, with baseball more than any other sport, mm-hmm. Peter, it's like they're handling the Holy Grail.
I know. Even stuff that you know, generally speaking, doesn't bring much to the
Peter,
game.
Do you know that the DH has been around 50 years?
I know.
I mean, come on, get over it.
And also, there was a reason to hold on to it when the umpires were different. When the strike zone was different, when they didn't play each other outside of the World Series. Now, all the umpires are the same. The strike zone's the same. They're playing each other every day now. Every day there's an interleague game. So now they're conferences. They're not leagues anymore. They used to be leagues, but now it's the same. Can you imagine in the NBA, one conference playing with a three-point play and the other one playing without it? I mean, we'd be ridiculous. They're conferences now. They play each other now. It's over. Universal DH, it makes perfect sense now.
And
it
would extend the careers of some people, too. I don't understand how the Players Association doesn't
exactly.
want it. I think baseball's always liked this debate, though, because it keeps the sport, you know, relevant, you know, especially World Series, and you see, you know, when they're playing with a DH and with not, it's another layer of conversation.
All right, that's great. We're now talking about it at 4:18 in New York. But there is a distinct disadvantage to the American League team. Right? When they have to play interleague games in the National League city or in the World Series,
when one of their biggest players, like when David Ortiz is a Red Sox, he's forced to play first base or be out of the lineup altogether? And pitchers who hardly hit all year, it's bad enough in the National League when they actually have to get a couple of at-bats every 5 days. In the American League, they don't hit at all. They're even worse. There's a distinct disadvantage to the American League having to play interleague play.
Now, getting back to the Astros for a moment, Clayton Kershaw was at his teammate Justin Turner's golf tournament, and Kershaw said, "I'd like to hear an apology from the Astros. They don't even seem like there's any regret." And I would have to say, there is no regret.
None.
What happened to the players? Zip. Nothing. Their reputation might take a little bit of a hit. I think they're going to get into a lot of fights this year. They're going to get thrown at. But what exactly happened to them? They're world champions. It wasn't taken away. They had that ring forever. So if you the only one that's apologized is Dallas Keuchel, who probably didn't benefit at all from the sign stealing because he's a pitcher. And he's now with the White Sox. But the act that Altuve and Bregman put on?
I know. It's sickening. But you know what? If Clayton Kershaw was on, you know what I'd ask him? Have you complained to your union? Rather than asking for the apology, where am I hearing you going to the union saying something needs to be done? These players need to be disciplined. They weren't disciplined because of a fear of the Players Association. Why don't we do something about it? Talk to your union. Get
Maybe
them
they
convinced.
Have. Maybe
well,
they
that's
have.
What. But I want to hear that. Instead of hearing, give me an apology, which does nothing. It would just be optics, eyewash, as you like to say. I want to hear that you're trying to do something about it. Complain to your union. You could say that. I've talked to the union. We've got to get this changed. This is ridiculous. I'm a member of the union, too. They're protecting these guys that cheated. What about the overwhelming majority that didn't cheat, that are being jobbed out of championships, awards, and money?
The union can't force guys to feel badly or apologize. Can't force them to apologize. Those guys don't feel badly. They didn't take a hit. None of them took a hit. Altuve makes $150 million over 5 years coming off that 2017 season. What's his regret?
But for Kershaw to say, I want an apology, first of all, what does that do? And second of all, if they heard you and apologized, they'd just be doing it to just gratify you. They wouldn't really mean it, because if they meant it, they would have said it already. They've all spoken publicly. None of them apologized. So you know it wouldn't be genuine. Yeah, I love that. Force somebody to apologize. What does that do?
I guess it gives them a little. I do like what Turner said and also what Clayton Kershaw said. The city council of L.A. made fools of themselves.
Of course they
typical
do.
Politicians saying that the Dodgers should be awarded the championship for 2017 and 2018. And Justin Turner said, I don't want that. I don't want a fake flag. We didn't win anything. You don't give somebody a chance. If you took the championship away from the Astros, you know what? There would not be a champion in 2017. It wouldn't be the Yankees, and it wouldn't be the Dodgers. And if you took it away in 2018, it wouldn't be the Dodgers. There just wouldn't be a champion. So for the city council, which should have other things on their mind, to actually try to pass a referendum that the Dodgers should be crowned champions, oh, please, know what's important.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Some breaking news. Basketball legend Kobe Bryant is dead at the age of 41.
He was just the last person you could ever imagine something like this happening.
Kobe meant a lot to me growing up. Just helped the world, give the Bryant family all the support they need.
Something from your life has been ripped away without any warning.
He brought a lot of joy, and we're going to miss him.
For me, man, he was everything. My childhood hero.
There's no silver lining here. It's all bad. It's all sad.
A singular word, Kobe, will resonate in the city of Los Angeles forever.
What can I say? Mamba out.
He was a bright light, and that's how I want to remember him.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
So one of the people that we were waiting on to see what they would say was LeBron James, and he finally came out with an Instagram post, and obviously he's incredibly distraught. Seems like they had a really, really good relationship. And, he posted it. He said, I'll have more. He said he kept trying to write and kept breaking down. So, just if you want to almost think about how it's affecting these players that knew him and had a relationship with him, think about how it's affecting you, where you really didn't know him and you had no relationship with him, but still somebody that was so important to your life because, you know, he was your pastime. You passed the time and you enjoyed yourself watching him play basketball all these years, and you felt like something was ripped away from you. Imagine the people that had a relationship with him, and one of them was Shaquille O'Neal, who's really having a hard time keeping it together, and he has a podcast, and this is what Shaq said and how he talked about his relationship with Kobe on The Big Podcast.
All the stuff that is documented between us, it was never a dislike. It's just, listen, this is what brothers do. I have a younger brother. We fight all the time, but guess what? I love him. And I love Kobe Bryant. I'm the first to say, hey, I got four rings, and I know I couldn't have got three without him. And I know I couldn't have got number four without D-Wade. I know these things. But, you know, sometimes when competition comes, you know, the competitive edge just, you know. So I'm glad we became closer. But I just sit back and say, what if?
Do you know that on Saturday night, you know, one of the last texts that Kobe ever sent was to Shaq's son, who was a college basketball player.
Yeah.
And he gave him advice on, you know, playing and stuff like that. So it seemed like Shaq looked at Kobe's kids as their uncle. And Kobe looked at Shaq's kids as if he was their uncle.
I think in spite of their problems, they saw it that way.
Right.
You know, even though they had sort of up and down, they knew they were indelibly connected. So
right.
There was like inherent love between the families, even though Shaq and Kobe had sort of their public squabbles at times.
And one of the great pieces of TV that I've ever seen, it was on NBA TV last year, and we talked about it, the two of them interviewing each other. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fascinating, and that might have been the beginning of the healing. And, you know, Don and I spoke about earlier what Jimmy Kimmel did mm-hmm. on the show yesterday, no audience and just a monologue to the camera and then showing clips from the 15 appearances that he had on. And he talked about the relationship with Shaq. He said, all I said was, you know, if he worked harder, we'd have had 12 championships. He said, but they left out the part where I said he was so great. But if he put in the work that like I did, that I had to do, he said, we might not have been defeated. And, you know, it's still not a great thing to say. I'm sure Shaq didn't like hearing that. But he did also say that Shaq was an amazing player. And, you know, the two of them together, I think Shaq also said in that podcast that they're the two greatest that ever played together. I mean, that's certainly up for debate. But the fact that it's up for debate shows you that they were pretty darn good.
Oh, they're absolutely in the conversation. There's no doubt about it.
Kevin Durant spoke about possibly honoring Kobe, and Durant of the Nets said nothing will be enough to honor Kobe.
I mean, it's so hard to say right now. I mean, it's just every basketball player go out there and play as hard as they can every single night to honor Kobe. I think that'll do. You know, you can't. I tried to write it, think about what I would say or what I would write. It was just like nothing was big enough, you know? And that's how I feel about everything when it comes to Kobe Bryant as his mark he left on the earth. It's like, it feels like nothing will ever be big enough to truly honor Kobe Bryant, but how we approach everyday life as people that were, me as a disciple of Kobe, who study him, learn from him, I think it's my justice to go out there and try to be the best that I can be every single day, and not just in basketball, just in everything. And I feel like everybody who loved Kobe is going to take that approach in their lives.
Now Kevin went on to address the loss of Kobe.
It's still hard to process this. It's a tragedy. It's made so many people in the world so sad. And having an opportunity to compete against Kobe and being around him in the human space was a joy. You know, and those emotions just started coming out at once. I mean, it's hard to comprehend all of this. But, you know, just having that time and those moments with Kobe, it was always about pressing forward. You know what I mean? And I think at this time it's so hard to do so with just the amount of impact that he had on all of us, you know. It's hard to keep going right now, but as a basketball community, as the world as a whole, I know we're all just mourning and sticking together when it comes to this.
It does show you how competitive these guys are, because in that NBA TV special where they interviewed each other, Shaq said, I wanted to get that fifth championship so I could have the same amount as you. And you know that Kobe wants to get that sixth championship that he could have the same amount as Michael Jordan. And that's what drives him. And also, Larry Brown said something very interesting on our show yesterday. You know, Kobe Bryant was one of the greatest players who ever lived. And all Kobe Bryant did was play every single game. There was no load management. Mm-mm. And you just wonder, why can't the players today do it? Obviously, Kobe Bryant was able to do it.
Well, LeBron seems to do it.
LeBron does it. But Kawhi doesn't do it.
Because they can't. Maybe
I
they can't.
I wonder why.
That's what makes Kobe so special, is that he worked so hard that he didn't need the rest. I think there are guys, let's face it, that if they worked as hard as Kobe, they just can't play 82 games. They would tire out too much. You know, they don't know how to pace themselves properly, or they just don't feel like they have to. You know, Bryant and Jordan and LeBron, they're a special breed of athlete that just they want to be out there and compete all the time. I think it's fair to say, Michael, that there's a lot of guys that are great, a lot of athletes that are the best at what they do in their given era, but do they have the same drive? That they want to be great every single night? That they want to win every single game that they ever play? You know, Spike Lee talked about how they had a ping pong table when they were making those Mars commercials because Jordan had to play ping pong, and he would be as competitive to win the ping pong game as he would be when he was playing a game for the Bulls. Maybe there's only elite special guys that can do that. Maybe we shouldn't criticize the ones that don't. We should just really hold in high regard the guys that had the drive to do that and be great every single night.
And there's such stories about these guys. You know, there was a story I read today where the team didn't play well, and all of them, most of them were wearing Kobe sneakers, you know, by mm-hmm. Nike. And he took all the sneakers in the locker room and said, "You guys don't deserve these." Took them away. And then there's a story about Michael Jordan. He would pay the guy at the airport to make sure that his luggage was the first one on the carousel. And then he would bet his teammates which luggage, you know, they all put in like $100, and the guy whose luggage came out first would win. That's how he cheated, but
I saw a clip too of Kobe coming off the practice floor one day, and Mitch Kupchak's standing there,
right?
And Kobe's coming off and is screaming, you know, I come to bleeping practice to get better. These mother bleepers don't play. If they're not going to play, I'm not coming to practice. And storms off because he's not getting the effort level from his teammates.
And Woj told a great story on Carlin's show last night where, you know, Kobe scored the 61 at the Garden. So everybody wants to meet Kobe after the game. He's doing all the press. It's the most points ever scored at the Garden until Carmelo broke it. And he must have left the Garden at about 12:30 that night. And the Lakers stayed over in New York City, and he got up at 4:30 in the morning to go practice with his trainer, Tim Grover.
After 61.
After he scored 61 and was at the Garden until late at night and probably didn't get back to the hotel until whatever. There's a certain something, as you said, Don, about those guys that we can't comprehend because not many people can do that.
And a lot of it just also comes down to that there's other things to do when you've got that kind of celebrity, when you're mm-hmm. that good. Is, yeah, maybe you want to go to the gym after scoring 61, but you're in New York City. There are a ton of parties you can go to, celebrities that you can kind of hang out with. And we kind of paint that picture as being wrong, and the Bryant way, the Jordan way, the James way is the way it should be. But when you look at it, those guys are in such a finite percentage that maybe it's just not possible.
There was Bart Scott on the Bart and Hahn show, which is right before our show from 1 to 3. He said something in an offhanded way, but it so resonated with me. He said, there are people that work so hard to be great. And there are people that work hard enough to be good. And he said, I worked hard enough to be good. I didn't want to work that hard to be great. And Alan asked him, well, what do you mean? He said, I wanted to be with my kids more. I wanted to relax more. I wanted to enjoy life more. I was okay with being good. He said, there are some that just, they're not okay with being good. They want to put in and sacrifice everything else to be great. And that was Kobe. And that was one of the reasons that, you know, I heard an interview with him today that he had the helicopter. He would get up in the morning and he would drive the kids to school. Then he'd take the helicopter and go practice. And then this is on a day of a game. Then he would take the helicopter back home so he could pick up the kids after school. And he said, it was important for me to get those 20 minutes with them because I don't see them as much as I could. And then he would take the helicopter back to Staples Center for the game.
And then back again at night, I'm guessing.
That's a drive to be great that a lot of people just don't have in their DNA.
And why do players want to be great? Some of them want to be great because they want to win championships. They want to have an amazing legacy. Some want to be great so they can be a celebrity and go to parties and hang out and be the man. You know, everybody's got their own motivations. Like Bart, he wanted to spend more time with his family. I mean, that's admirable, right? I mean, not a lot of athletes can do that. You make personal sacrifices. But Bryant seemed like he was a guy that did it because he just wanted to be the best and to win. So his motivations were at least different than the guy that maybe wanted to be great because he wanted to have everybody fawn all over him or go to the parties
and
be broken down. That wasn't him at all.
No, he was not a big party guy. And in fact, there's a video that's been going around of him as a really young guy talking to other young players. I think Iverson's there, and he's giving a speech about just finding one woman and settling down and not partying. And that wasn't really who he was. Jeremy Lin posted on his Instagram, RIP Kobe, from sharing the same birthday to opponents to teammates, respect for everything you did for the game and world. Gone too soon. Life's truly too precious. Hashtag legend. One of the greatest basketball moments of my life was getting to be, I sat in the second row for Lin versus Kobe. Lin went for his career high at the time, 38 points. Kobe went for 34. The Knicks won. It was an absolute duel where Kobe started, I think, 1-for-11. And then at the end of the game, just started going full Kobe and pouring it on. And the Knicks held him off. And at that time, in that moment of Lin's sanity, I would argue the Kobe moment at the Garden might have been the high water point of what was happening there. But I thought it was interesting to hear from Lin, who eventually then went on to be his teammate.
Now, you talked about, you know, one woman, and he got married young, Kobe, and had children young. And Julius Randle also got married young and was a teammate of Kobe's. And that was something that they shared. And Kobe would give him advice on, you know, your father and a husband at such a young age. And Randle did not talk the other night when the Knicks beat the Nets, but today it's shoot around because the Knicks are playing tonight against the Hornets. He said that Kobe was everything.
For me, man, he was everything, bro. That was my childhood hero growing up. So a very unfortunate situation for me, but, you know, I can't imagine what his family is going through, all the families that are involved. So my prayers are with them, but you know, he was a Mamba, so he's everything.
And he said you could ask Kobe for anything.
He was an open book. Honestly, he was always there. Like, when I say he was really always there, like, answer the phone whenever you wanted to get some work in, he was there. When we were in L.A., I was actually going to go see him, but because our practice schedule, you know, how the tournament and stuff that he had with his daughter didn't really line up for me to get a chance to go out there. But when I say he was an open book, he was literally like an open book. Like, his thing was, don't be afraid to ask me anything. And that's what it was.
And that was the big change in him, because at the beginning of his career, he was all about being an assassin on the court. He didn't have many friends. Wode said something so interesting. Chris Carlin said to him, you know, at the end of his career, he said he probably had five real friends from basketball. And Wode said, and I was shocked that he said, I'm surprised he said there were that many. He said not many people liked him when he played. But you could see he loved this role of being a mentor to people. Like, he changed. He changed once the competition stopped.
And it crossed sports, too. The Devils' P.K. Subban was telling a story about how he reached out to Kobe to get advice when he played with the Nashville Predators and they went to the Stanley Cup Final. And he tweeted out pictures last night of meeting and hanging out with Kobe. I mean, imagine, so he would take phone calls from different athletes. I mean, just to be that open, right? You would think that somebody of that ilk would be guarded and you wouldn't have access. But it seemed like whenever anybody needed advice on anything, he was there. He was there for Nancy Lieberman, there for P.K. Subban. It didn't matter whether you were a teammate, opponent, played another sport. I mean, that's what I'm blown away by, where baseball players, football players, hockey players tweeting about not just meeting him, but asking him questions, talking to him, being able to reach out to him.
I feel weird, too, because like I was such a huge fan of him when he was playing, to the point that I went to Boston to see him play there for the last time. And yet, I wasn't following him on social media. I went and looked like at his social media after he passed.
Mm-hmm.
he was such a regular, for such a megastar, he was a very regular person on social media. All posts of his family, on Twitter, a lot of retweets of things that interested him with only like kind of positive things. It's not like he was getting into Twitter beefs or anything, but he was acting like a regular person using it. And he seemed very in touch with people. He seemed pretty reachable for someone of an absolutely ridiculous magnitude.
I just got the sense, Peter, that he seemed so much happier after he played. Because there was such a drive that he could never reach what he wanted to reach. I mean, it looked like he was going for perfection, and no one can achieve perfection, but he seemed like he just relaxed. You know, when we talked to Derek Jeter last week, I told you guys off the air, I've never heard him that relaxed and open. And I think that once the journey is over, the playing journey, that you come closer to being the person that you're supposed to be. And I just sensed the happiness with Kobe. I really did. And I sensed the same thing with Jeter. Not Jeter was not the same sort of assassin as Kobe, at least publicly. And I don't think that other players hated Jeter. He was not that way. And baseball is not that kind of sport.
Right, right.
Where you have to be that, you know, physical against somebody and, you know, push him around. But, you know, Derek was all about winning. That's all Kobe cared about, was winning. And now that that's been done and you've won as much as you could win, I think it allowed the happiness to come through.
And, you know, obviously Jeter's different because now he's owning a baseball team and that's his focus. But maybe as his kids get older, you know, maybe we'll see that side of Jeter a little bit later on where he could be a little bit more open and a little bit more comfortable. But now it seems like he's so focused on the team and the competitive side of that he hasn't let his guard down just yet. But maybe as his kids get older, we'll see the Kobe side in Derek.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.